is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, February 20th, 2020. I'm Buster Olney. I'm down in JetBlue Park in Fort Myers. And back in Bristol, Taylor Schwenk, Troy Farkas, manning the board. Some news and notes before we talk to Carl Ravitch about Rob Manfred and how he's boxed in and decisions that he may make against the Houston Astros. Giancarlo Stanton addressed the Astros sign-stealing scandal in meeting with reporters on Wednesday, and he says he could have hit 80 home runs if he knew what pitch was coming. He said the 80 home run comment wasn't to make it about me. The point I was trying to make is that if I was part of that team and got a home run record doing that, there's no way that would be upheld and not have asterisks or taken away, so neither should their accolades is what I'm getting at with that. Joe Girardi was on with Golic and Wingo talking about the fact that the Astros players weren't penalized.
You know, there's some people that lost their jobs that, you know, really were the people that had to pay for it, but there were a lot more people involved. And, you know, the financial gains for the players are substantial if they have big seasons because of this. So if there's no punishment for them, I'm not sure that it stops. I'm really not sure, because the financial gains, similar to the steroid era, it's very similar. Like, if you know what's coming and you have a big year and you're a free agent, there's a lot to be made there, and players want to take care of their families. So I'm not exactly sure what the right answer is, but I don't know how much of a deterrent it is for players right now.
And we keep on waiting for Commissioner Rob Manfred to come out with new guidelines, new penalties moving forward, and also waiting to see if he comes down with a hammer in another way against the 17 Astros. We'll be talking with Carl about that. Before that, I want to mention another of ESPN's podcasts, The Hoop Collective. Brian Windhorst and Andrew Hahn were in Chicago for All-Star Weekend, and they were asking players an interesting question. How early on in their lives did they realize that they were better than good? They get some unexpected thoughts from the NBA's youngest stars. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
All aboard, it's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
That's right, the Rabbit Train was down in Florida earlier this week for a sit-down with Baseball Commissioner Carl Ravitch. Rabbit, how you doing?
I'm good. Did you just call me the Baseball Commissioner, or are you just suggesting that I was with the Baseball Commissioner?
Because I could go either way. Well, I said you had a sit-down with the Baseball Commissioner. Right? But you know what? You'd be a good commissioner at this point. Rob Manfred might even want you to take over as commissioner after this week, at least for temporarily. How are you doing?
Situations where everybody and their mother has ideas on how they could do things differently, and they should all be commissioner. I'm doing great. The idea that we're going to have, spring training games, and I think the focus will shift a little bit in different markets is a very good thing. And I'm not running from this at all. And I think there's a lot of things that still need some resolution, but I think it will encourage people to recognize, in spite of all this noise, there will be actual games being played on the field, which is a really good thing.
Which is why I want to lead off today, and we will get to your sit down with the commissioner in just a second, but I want to lead off today with some news around baseball. I thought this was really interesting. Our old friend and colleague David Ross announcing that Chris Bryant is going to be his leadoff guy, announcing that in the middle of February. He talked about how Chris Bryant is really good at bat, gets on base, is probably one of our best base runners. His baseball IQ is extremely high. When you talk about putting the best players at the top of the order, I want to put him at the top. Last year, Carl, Cubs ranked last in the majors and on base percentage from that leadoff spot. I like it. I've always liked the idea of putting your best hitter up first to guarantee the best chance to get him as many plate appearances as possible. What do you think?
Sure. I mean, it felt like that David Ross and Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein in the interviews that they had to see who would be the next GM, David Ross probably threw out the idea that we're getting, or you guys are getting, no production from the leadoff spot. I would consider somebody like Chris Bryant to be my leadoff hitter. Ooh, well, that sounds interesting. Okay, that's different. That's something we haven't really done here very often. I mean, look, he is replacing the guy who used more lineups and shook things up more than any manager in baseball. But the concept of engaging or re-engaging Chris and getting him to be excited about baseball and to contribute to this team, you know, there are a lot of positives in a decision or a conversation like that. I think what you have to do when you do something like that, and I'm sure David knows this and it's been discussed, is that if in the first 2 weeks, you know, Chris Bryant is 3 for 27, do you abandon it or do you stick with it? And I think a lot of times we tend to see guys abandon things, and it'd be nice to see him succeed. But if not, let's just stick with it. Let's ride this for a little while and allow somebody to get their footing. Hitting leadoff is a little different than hitting third or second or fourth.
Along those same lines, and you mentioned Joe Maddon, I think he has one of the more fascinating lineup set of lineup decisions to make because, of course, he's got Anthony Rendon, and he's got the best player in baseball in Mike Trout, and he has Shohei Ohtani. I personally would love to see him in the same philosophy that what we're seeing from David Ross, put Mike Trout in leadoff spot, put Ohtani in the two hole, put Rendon in the three hole, and put the pressure on the opposing pitchers right away. I know generally speaking in the past, they've not put Trout in leadoff spot because they feel like, hey, let's take advantage of his power. You know what? I love coming right out of the gate at the opposing pitcher. What would you do?
It would be a really compelling lineup for sure. You know, I think you could go almost two ways. I think you could lead Rendon off and then have either Trout or Ohtani hit. I think you could do what you said, have Trout lead off. I don't think you lead off Ohtani, but I do think you have the flexibility to say, you know what, I kind of want to experiment. Let's let Anthony lead off, and let's have Ohtani, the lefty, bat second and Trout bat third. Or you put Ohtani third and you have right, left, right. So I think there are options. To me, Rendon as a leadoff hitter is as intriguing. Well, I wouldn't say as intriguing, but is intriguing. Trout is just more intriguing because he's, you know, it would be like leading off Aaron Judge, except Trout's shown a little bit better ability not to strike out. But you're bringing up your middle linebacker to hit first, which is, of course, against the conventional long-standing norms of what a leadoff hitter, you know, Kenny Lofton has been in our time. Ricky Henderson, who's a home run guy. It would look very different, but I'm open to most things, at least for a while. Let's try it.
Yeah, we'll see if they wind up doing something like David Fletcher leading off or some other, you know, a secondary guy and then having Trout in stay in that two spot, then maybe Rendon, maybe Ohtani, but that'll be... I was texting back and forth with Joe during the winter about this. That'll be a fun series of decisions that he's got to make. Bleacher tweet from Robert Hardy asks, Carl, who are the key names who could pull the lever on DHing the National League, and will it happen for 2021? My view is it happens in 2022 when they go through the next collective bargaining agreement. And the key names to pull the levers are Tony Clark and Rob Manfred. What do you think?
as it stands now, assuming both of those guys are in the positions they're currently in, when that agreement gets finalized, those are always going to be the two key names. Whoever runs the Players Association and whoever runs Major League Baseball, you know, they are the deciders. And I think what we've learned from this situation that we're dealing with now with the cheating scandal is, you can see somebody losing power, and I'm really not saying this about Manfred. I think he's firmly entrenched as the commissioner. I think he has the support of nearly most of the owners in the way that this has been handled, short of using, you know, the term metal when it came to, or a piece of metal when it came to the trophy. But I think he's firmly entrenched. I think the Players Association has some concerns about their leadership and the level of fracture that we're seeing amongst its members. And, you know, I hope for his sake, I like him. I hope he stays in that position and is able to get everybody behind him. But I don't see another name currently that would have an influence over when the DH moves to the National League more than the two guys that negotiate the agreement.
You agree with me it'll happen in the first season after the CBA is agreed to?
You know, it's the whole dynamic between the two sides is so fluid. Part of this, and I'm sure we'll get into it with the Manfred conversation, but part of all of the stuff that's going on here is that very delicate dance that both sides have to do in order to enable them to continue to work together to establish, you know, sort of the foundation of a new collective bargaining agreement. You can't just come out and napalm the other side with what they're doing or their ideas, because ultimately you got to work together for the betterment of the game and the future of the game. So I think that part of what we've witnessed here is a very delicate dance between these two sides on how to work their way through this scandal so that there is some shred of connectivity between the two sides that allow them to continue to work together.
Yeah, 100%. And you hope that that improves as we go along. Another on the field issue I want to raise to you, Aaron Judge yesterday continued to be held out of hitting drills. He's dealing with a sore right shoulder. Aaron Judge said, when I buzzed Judge on it real quick, he said he's game ready. I hear that, but Carl, I'm concerned about Aaron Judge and hoping that he can stay healthy. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. You know, to me, like other players that are showing up at camp that are game ready, they are ready to play. There is no conversation about, well, we're going to maybe miss the first few games. There's a reason that you're leaving somebody out of a lineup, understanding the long picture, understanding the goal of having Aaron Judge get as many at bats. But again, if you don't look at it as a yellow flag, then you're colorblind, because you're missing the big point, which is we are paying attention to this. We are concerned enough to say and let everyone know, when you don't see Aaron Judge in the first couple of games, there's a reason for that, as opposed to everybody's ready to go. We can't wait to put our everyday lineup out there for one at bat. So you have to acknowledge the elephant in the room. It exists. It's real. And sure, given that we had this last year with Aaron Judge, given how much pain he was really in that wasn't discussed, of course. And when you come back off of an off season, how many times have we asked, well, why didn't that particular player in any sport have something done that would allow them to be healthy when we all return, as opposed to, and this is not Aaron Judge, but how many times have we had that conversation? So that player is having surgery 3 weeks before the season, 2 weeks before spring training. What happened in November and December? Well, you know, why did we wait? I get that's not the case, but yes, Buster, you have to be concerned when the conversation like that centers around a centerpiece of your team.
All right, and I want to spend a minute talking about the Tampa Bay Rays. I was in their camp the other day, and the thing that jumped out to me, Carl, just walking around from field to field, this might be the deepest Tampa Bay roster that we've ever seen. Their outfielders, Austin Meadows, Kevin Kiermaier, Hunter Renfroe, Manny Margot. Infielders, you got Willy Adames and Yandy Diaz and Joey Wendell and Brandon Lau and Jose Martinez and G-Man Choi and this newcomer from Japan. And I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of his last name, even though I asked, Yoshi Tsugo, or Tsugo is what I was told. And then you have a rotation of Snell and Morton and Glasnow and the others, a great bullpen. That to me, like, I did a power ranking in mid-January, given all the Astros issues going on. Number one for me are the Yankees, number two the Dodgers. Yep. I got the Rays at number three. That is a deep team, Carl.
Yeah, look, and I've said this all offseason, there are a couple of factors that have gone into the optimism that Tampa Bay should have. One is the dismantling of the Red Sox. When the team that you competed with loses Mookie Betts and David Price and their manager, things dramatically impact you. This is a team that felt great about itself last year. This is a team that went in and played great in the playoff game and just sort of destroyed Sean Manaea. And we had an unlikely hero kind of go deep a couple of times in that game. They have a manager who, like Alex Cora, when he was in good standing with the Red Sox, completely controlled the clubhouse. The players respected him. The players liked him. Aaron Boone's another guy. There are a billion reasons, including health. We haven't heard. We are not going to use Charlie Morton in the first couple of weeks. We're going to have Kevin Kiermaier sit his first few at bats. Tyler Glasnow is still struggling a little bit. None of that stuff is coming out of Tampa. They're more concerned about a plan to maybe move some of the games to Montreal in a handful of years than they are anything on the field. I agree 100%. And part of the reason I think the Red Sox did what they did was the realist in the room has to look at the Rays and say, we're not we're not as good as that team. I'm sorry. We're not. We don't have the pitching they have. We have far more health questions than they have. And as we all have seen, and you and I, you know, have access to different players and different coaches and different managers, the Rays are like the A's, but probably a little bit better in that when you talk about them, everybody inside the game knows just how damn good they are.
Yeah, and very well run. And I agree with you. I think the fact that the, you know, there's such preeminence with the Yankees and the Rays in the division, I actually think it makes it easier for Heim Bloom to make decisions with the Red Sox and to be aggressive and to trade Jackie Bradley Jr. at some point, to trade Brandon Workman, capitalize on his value right now within baseball, because Tampa Bay, Yankees are that good. You mentioned about, you know, everyone wants to be commissioner. I don't know if you saw this last night. Jose Canseco tweeted out, "I'm ready to be baseball's next commissioner." I don't know. Of all the things on the table at this point, that's not one of them. What was it like to sit down with Rob the other day? And what really jumped out to you? But at the end of the interview, you were like, wow, he said that.
Well, I think, you know, to be honest with you, I think the sort of physical appearance of the commissioner, you know, anytime that I've engaged with him, he's generally up. He's generally in what looks to be really good, wide awake spirits. This was a Sunday morning. It was about 6:30 a.m. when he showed up. But he just looked like this had taken a toll on him that he hadn't anticipated. I think the blowback and all of that has been far greater than he ever thought. I think the idea that you have players fighting with players, believe it or not, does impact him in a negative way. He is the commissioner of the sport. He may work for the owners, and yet it is his sport. All these elements are under his purview. And the idea that you have this much infighting in your sport is a reflection of and a mandate on, you know, Rob Manfred. So I think the struggle that he's dealing with is real and great. Some of it is his own doing. Others, of course, are these fires that sprout up every single day with some of the marquee names in baseball. That struck me. In hindsight, you know, describing the World Series trophy as a piece of metal while very dismissive of its significance, you know, I think in the spirit of what he was trying to say was what I'm doing, in my opinion, will serve a huge purpose, that there will very much be a conversation around the 2000 Astros 5 years from now, 25 years from now, 50 years from now, that we continue to have about the 1919 Chicago White Sox. That's 100 years ago. And here we are in 2020, still talking about them, never forgetting. The problem with that is that there is a generation of folks, especially the younger ones, who aren't able to connect those dots. They wouldn't know who the 1919 White Sox are because they're still 10 to 15 years old. But eventually, they will learn about that team and the reason that we talk about that team. He's kind of banking on the idea that we will eventually talk about the 2017 Astros the same way you do about those teams, you know, that have done things that are so egregious and violate the norms of Major League Baseball and break rules.
And you made mention of this about Rob and his standing. It's been interesting to me to do talk radio shows around the country this week. On Mina Kimes' podcast, it's going to come out on Friday. You know, the question comes up, you know, is Rob Manfred in trouble? And I'm like, no. like, in my opinion, I don't think there's any way he would be in trouble. I get it. It hasn't been a great week for him. He's getting hammered by players every day. People are calling him an idiot on Twitter and social media. But this is someone who has been tremendous in terms of generating revenue for the people that he worked for. And those are the 30 owners. I think he's absolutely on solid ground. You know him better than I do. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm absolutely not worried about it. And I think that anybody who, and it's very easy. I mean, look, he is walking around and he has a bullseye on his back, his front, his feet, his head. You know, he is an easy target right now. And it's very easy for Twitterverse and fans to follow in the footsteps of the Aaron Judges and the Bellingers and the Trouts. You know, you think about it. You have the biggest names in the game. You have the biggest markets in the game. You have some of the most vocal fan bases in the game, all kind of being led to the same target, Rob Manfred. And look, There's a reason they call them followers on Twitter. There are a lot of followers out there that will go with wherever they're taken by their chosen leader, their guy. And their guy is all pointing the finger at somebody who, in their world, you know, didn't punish the players enough. And he's kind of pushing back a little bit and suggesting, give it time, and I did. But no, he's to, in my opinion, in no trouble at all. I will say...
Nope, I agree.
I think the players have given him an out here. I think he could easily sit there tomorrow and say, look, after internal consideration, after discussing this with my trusted circle, after discussing this with Hall of Famers, and after listening to the majority of players who have spoken in a near unanimous voice, I've decided that perhaps I was short in not considering enough to take away the title. I will listen to what everybody is saying. While this is my decision, I am basing my decision on all the information that has come forward since my initial decision. And I do think that scratches the itch of everybody that is looking for a pound of flesh, because I think there is a distinction between disciplining, 20-game suspension, 50-game suspension, and punishing, which I think his intent is. I think when he says, look, this is something that these players will wear the rest of their lives, is a punishment. Well, I think if you take that trophy away and you vacate the title, you have subsequently addressed all those who want punishment.
Just to follow up on that, one of my questions that's popped up about that is, I don't know, and let's face it, everything, and I don't think that the casual fans understand how boxed in he is by the fact, and this isn't a criticism of the union, but the fact is that he has to work under the terms of collective bargaining agreement and with a union, which limits a lot of what he does. I don't know if he has the power, Carl, to unilaterally strip the Astros of a title without it being challenged, because, and I haven't run this past Tony Clark, but if you're Tony Clark and you have players who had accomplishments, who were given immunity on that 2017 team, and Major League Baseball says what they did is invalidated, I suspect the union would punch back. So I don't even know if he has the power to do that unilaterally. And I wonder if that could be, you know, part of the equation for Rob as he decides what to do. Just on that point, what do you think?
It's possible. Then float the trial balloon that I am seriously now considering vacating the title. And let's see. You know, you can float trial balloons without declaring I'm doing this. And, you know, I was on with Rich Eisen yesterday, and he brought up what I thought was an interesting point, although I don't think it's possible given this relationship, given the immunity. He's like, look, they may have granted immunity, but they didn't grant anonymity. But let's like we have seen in the world of politics, show me the evidence. Show me what these players have told you. You know, you don't need to attach a name to it, but you can certainly suggest that player X told me this. Here's the quotes from player Y on when we decided to use, you know, the bat and the garbage can. Yes, player X, Y, and Z all confirmed that in the 2017 World Series, during game two, we did this. You know, I don't know, but my guess is that by granting immunity, you are at least having to give pause to exposing the quotes that were given to you. But it's a fair question. My guess is he has the ability to do that. And again, I think it would move the school of public opinion at least off of him and maybe back into his court to say, look, I'm considering this. I hear what the majority of people, let alone players, are saying, and I'm going to consider this now because I may have shortchanged that, and I'm at least considering it.
And last one for you along those lines, in trying to think of a way for Rob to thread the needle, boxed in by the presence of a union, you know, what's been done with the decisions made in the investigation, the immunity. My idea yesterday, and I ran this past some team officials, and there was a lot of support for this, was for Rob to basically ask the owners for an unprecedented resolution of censure, ask the 29 owners to vote on it. And I suspect that it would be 29-1 in favor of a censure of the 2017 Astros to be attached to the records forever. So it goes down in history. 2017 Astros have this scarlet letter C attached to their names that they cheated to win the World Series, and to do that and then to forward it to the Players Association and said, look, this is what Major League Baseball has done under its umbrella. We would very much welcome you seconding this to put this down in perpetuity, that the entire sport recognized that the Houston Astros and what they did that year was unacceptable and they were cheating. And he doesn't need the union's permission to do that. And he also would brand them forever. And if you're, you know, a member on that team, you can never escape that. And I know it feels light, and it's not as great as suspending a player or taking their money or taking away a trophy, but I think it would be lasting. Do you like that idea?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that you're formalizing what he believes he's already done. You know, you literally are formalizing through a censure and through is this sort of scarlet letter, which he believes he's attached to everyone associated with the 2017 Astros. Just in closing, the three things that you got to, that in my opinion, you have to remember here. He knows labor law as well as anybody out there talking about labor law. That's his background. So he's aware of the box that he's in. He understands about immunity. That's number one. Two is this dance that he's got to continue to do with the Players Association. I think both sides are starting to push a little bit to a place where this thing may just blow up, and all of a sudden you realize they're not even going to talk to each other because they're sort of violating what may be either spoken code between the two of them or unwritten code between the two of them. And thirdly, and most importantly, whether it's a censure, whether you strip the title, whether you just leave it as is, we have, and I think this is Aaron Judge's and other people's points, we have gotten to a point where we refuse to acknowledge the fact that we are rewarding or allowing a team to win a championship and not do anything about it by cheating. And you simply cannot. If we are going to be honest about integrity of the game, let's talk about integrity of the players. The players showed very little integrity when they cheated. You cannot send the message to a 10-year-old, a 40-year-old, or a 100-year-old that in your sport it was okay collectively as an organization to cheat and subsequently been rewarded with a series championship. You can't do it.
Absolutely. Carl, thanks for doing this.
Okay, guys. Look forward to some games.
Earlier this week, the Milwaukee Brewers signed Brock Holt and Craig Counsell, the Brewers manager, general manager David Stearns, talked about that decision. Give a listen.
Brock's, true multi-position player. I'd include the outfield in that. He's played all over. His value has been to clubs in that he's played all over. I told him, you know, you don't know where you're going to play. You just know that we'll find a spot for you to play. And so it's the kind of guy where we you're going to need it, and now it's there for us.
Brock has a lot of things that we like in a player. I think first and foremost, as all you guys know, he plays all over the field. And we really like those types of guys, and we don't feel like you can have too many of those types of guys. It gives Craig tremendous flexibility, allows him to mix and match in a variety of different ways over the course of the season, depending on who's healthy, who's performing, who we're playing. He hits from the left side of the plate. He hits right-handed pitching. We see a lot of right-handed pitchers in our division and in our league. That's pretty attractive, and he's a tremendous guy in the clubhouse.
Bleacher tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. We got David, baseball fan, 1918, a DC guy. We'll give him a little shine here. I'm a DC guy myself. He asks, are you surprised that the Cubs and the Indians, having seen what the Red Sox got in return for a one-and-done Mookie Betts, haven't traded Bryant or Lindor yet? I don't really see either player re-signing.
No, not the same, because Mookie Betts, of course, is a free agent in the upcoming fall, whereas both Bryant and Lindor are under team control for both 2020 and 2021. Now, I do think that both players are going to get traded. I think it's very likely that Lindor is traded before July 31st, but it wouldn't surprise me. It didn't surprise me that they weren't traded to this point.
All right, last one here. Mark Sherman at Shark Merman. Clever handle there. King Felix didn't get any recognition from the Baseball Tonight guys in the King talk. Carl Hubbell may have been better than him, but Jim Leyritz certainly wasn't.
Yeah, I kind of felt bad after I did that. I absolutely ambushed him with that question, asking him who he thinks of when he hears the nickname King. I did think he was going to say Hubbell. he said Laritz, which hadn't occurred to me. And then a couple people did point out on Twitter, as you did, Shark, that we didn't mention King Felix. And I kind of felt stupid about that. Taylor, when you heard me ask that question, did any big king come to mind for you?
The only king that came to mind for me is, King Henrik Lundqvist in the NHL. Not a baseball player, obviously, but that is he's been the source of my ire, in terms of my Washington Capitals fandom a couple times. So he's the only one that cropped up for me.
Okay. Well, sorry to bring up bad memories.
So unrelated, but yeah, that's what came to mind. That's Bleacher Tweets. Keep those questions coming. I tried to stay away from the Astros talk. So anything you guys want to chat about staying away from the Astros, if you want to ask about your team, have at it. We definitely want to talk a little bit more ball than this controversy, although the controversy is good for the podcast.
Absolutely. That is it for today. My thanks today to Taylor and to Troy and to Carl. Thanks for listening, everybody. I will be back with you on Friday. I'll be here at JetBlue Park again in the morning. I'm going to go see the Twins in the afternoon. They have a night game on Friday, and I'm looking forward to that.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.